Blog Talk Radio. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to A Time for Justice. On A Time for Justice, this is a show where we discuss legal and current events in a roundtable discussion of legal minds. We discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice, and the negative impact these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law. But all too often, this is not the actions that we see. My name is Sister Pamela Muhammad, and I am an attorney. And our guest tonight will not make those excuses for racist conduct often seen, which are really just distractions from the truth, which is the path to justice and equal protection. So let's talk about just, fair, and equitable solutions, which are in the best interest of the people. Let's remove the distractions. Again, my name is Sister Pamela Muhammad, and I am the host of The Elevated Places Network presents A Time for Justice. Thank you all for listening and tuning in tonight as we have a really great show because we're talking about a very important topic, which is juvenile courts, youth, community, and the success of mentorship programs. You know, because mentorship programs, I want, after we talk tonight, we want to make sure that we are empowered to with solutions that we can actually go out and help our youth. And we also want to talk about how important our youth are. And we have a wonderful brother who's an attorney who's going to give us some feedback on juvenile courts and how they operate. And another brother who is just one of my all-time favorites. He's a mentorship extraordinaire. This brother is a community person, and I'm going to introduce him as well and open up both of the brothers' mics. First, I want to go ahead, and I'm going to go ahead and bring in our brother James W. Muhammad. Brother James lives in, I'm going to bring you in, Brother James. I want to give you that intro. I'm going to give you the intro, okay? So Brother James, he lives in Dallas, Texas. Brother James is a member of the mosque in Dallas, and he is also tonight coming to us in his expertise as the associate director and co-founder of an organization called Dynasty Hip Hop Mentoring Program. And that program was in St. Louis, Missouri, as well as being in Dallas, Texas. Very, very wonderful program. He received lots of awards and acknowledgement for this youth program. 2009 to 2011, he got community service awards, youth service awards. He worked in collaboration with other community service organizations, 100 Black Men in St. Louis, Missouri. One of the big things that we're going to talk about tonight is how Dynasty Hip Hop Mentoring Program collaborated with Judge Jimmy Edwards, who was the 22nd Judicial Judge of the Juvenile Courts for the state of Missouri. And Dynasty Hip Hop Mentoring Program found great success in this partnership mentoring at-risk youth in the Judicial District Court. You know, deterring them from street life, gangs, and violence is what Brother James, is talking about. So we're going to bring him in and like to welcome him to the show. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Brother James. Yes, sir.
All praise due to Allah.
All praises are due to Allah. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Yes, sir. Yes, next we want to bring in our brother, attorney Deshaun Peoples. And Brother Deshaun X Peoples is a practicing attorney since 2001 in Tennessee. Brother Deshaun, over the years, has practiced law all over the state of Tennessee on a broad range of cases. He is the former Chancery Court Special Master for Shelby County, Tennessee. While he tried many cases, both criminal and civil, he has found that his passion is in cases involving children and families. And that is so very important. I always like to lift him up as a black man attorney who is really concerned with children and families. You know, this is not something we see every day in our community. And so we want to really give Brother Deshaun a shout out for all his work. Brother Deshaun has been an attorney for the Tennessee Department of Children's Services. And since that time, he represented countless children and families in the court system in cases involving delinquency, child abuse, custody, and all aspects of family law. He's a husband and a father of a toddler. So without further ado, let me go ahead and open up Brother Deshaun's mic. Let's see. Brother Deshaun.
Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Wa alaikum
salam.
How are you, sir?
Good to hear you,
sir.
Oh,
yes,
I'm doing wonderful.
Good.
Good to be on your show.
Yes, sir. Good, good, good to hear you as well. And, you know, Brother Deshaun, because he understands I have a passion for youth as well, he's always been willing to assist us with some of our program content, and we really do appreciate it. And so with Brother James on. Now, Brother James with Dynasty Hip Hop is someone else who has been a long-standing hard worker when it comes to youth and actually, you know, mentoring them. So let's start off with the question. I just wanted to start off this conversation, juvenile courts, youth, community, and the success of mentorship programs. And I want to get you all to kind of give me an introduction on what do you think is so important about our youth? When it relates to this topic. And Brother James, you want to start?
Yes, ma'am. The importance of black youth is, first of all, they are under attack. We know that we are constantly and consistently and persistently under attack by an open enemy. And there's a misunderstanding that our black youth have been perceived as super predators, that they are volatile, that they are hostile, that they're naturally aggressive. But they do have a passion for expression. But what happens is we have found out that music can negatively impact the way our youth appear or the way they act. Studies show that heavy metal music listening has been associated with increased depression, delinquency, risky behavior, smoking, and conduct problems. Fans of heavy metal music and rap music show a greater tendency to engage in reckless behavior than their peers. So this shows that our young people are being purposely targeted with music that is detrimental, that is volatile, and plays an instrumental part in killing ourselves and destroying our self-image and degrading our women and ourselves. So Dynasty Hip Hop Mentoring Program has been part of the solution in giving people an analytical look at the music and what the music does. And we brought young people into the mosque and let them we set up recording studios in the mosque, and we bring these young people in, and just like a petri dish, when a doctor takes an evaluation, he takes a blood sample, and then that blood sample is often called a culture. And what we do is we take a sample of their mind by letting them record in the studio, and we capture the culture that they are deeply immersed in. And sometimes in these these cultures and in these songs, we hear them say how much they hate their mother, how much they hate their father, how much they hate their sister, and then we are able to come up with a program that is not cookie cutter, because each person has a different injury. Each person has a different problem going on in their mind. So by us listening to the music, we become fans of the music, and we just ask the man, what do you mean when you say that you don't like your mother? What do you mean when you say your father's no good? What do you mean? So by acting as a fan of what they say, they go deep into it, and we're able to come with a program that can help them resolve these problems. So our youth play an intricate part in innovation and greatness and growth of this world, as we see that great things come from the black mind. Most of the things that we see in this world have been developed by black people, everything from automobiles to red lights to stoplights to protective eyewear to Hidden Figures, the movie where the black women actually made a route from Earth to the moon, to rocketry in general was made by a black man. The first guided missile was made by a black man. So these are the things that we have to offer, but we have to stop letting the enemy control the creativity and outlet from which our children create from, and stop the aggression, stop the hostility, and bring it back to a creative force that is intricate and immersed in the loyalty and love of God.
Beautiful, beautiful. And you know what? This is so awesome, because as Brother James just talked about music and art and how it can be a negative influence and how it also can be used as a positive influence, Brother Deshaun, one of the, as you may have heard at the beginning, they actually had a program that was in a school called Innovative Concept Academy. And I know in 2017, well, let me see, I won't quote the year, but this particular school was the only school in America overseen by a court system dedicated to the education and rehabilitation of delinquent teens. So this is kind of right into what we see, because you work in the courts and you know, we see the impact of the negative music. And so it's just beautiful what he's saying. So talk to me, Brother Deshaun, I guess about, you know, what do you find important about the youth, and explain to us what do juvenile courts do, if you want to do both of those. Go ahead.
Well, I was listening to the brother, and, you know, I'm running for this judicial seat as the juvenile court judge for Memphis and Shelby County, and I was listening to the brother talk, and I love how what he was saying is just a further expression of what I've been trying to get across, which is that there is no, I've been calling them big box solutions, but he said cookie cutter solution to the problems that are faced in our community. Everybody has a separate thing that caused this. Like he said, a separate injury. And I was listening to him, and he stated that, you know, rap music and heavy metal both lead to the same reactions. The problem we have is that we do have enemies, and perception has been tailored such for our children that when a black child becomes violent as a result of his influences, and a white child becomes violent as a result of his influences, one is looked at as trouble, and one is looked at as bad. You can see it in these shootings that take place. In most of these shootings, as long as there's not a black person somewhere involved, before they even find out who the shooter is, they're talking about mental illness. The discussion is, wow, how did somebody mentally ill get a gun? Before we know anything about the parents, before we know anything about the person, that's the discussion, that they are obviously mentally ill, because nobody who's sane would do this. But when it comes to our children, the assumption is that, you know, just violence, you know, that's to be expected. And so there's no further evaluation. There's no further discussion. But he was talking about how the first guided missile was designed by a black man. But the problem we have now is that the missile guidance systems are still being built by black men in prison. And there's a huge push to put our children in prison and to just keep them in that pipeline so that they end up basically building America for pennies on the dollar. We have to stop that. And the, you know, the juvenile court is one of those few places. I don't know what it's like in other states, but in the state of Tennessee, there's a broad range of authority, and it's different from most courts. Most courts, the judge has a limited range of what he can do, but it's expected that because the juvenile court is dealing with children and families, that there are going to be some creative solutions. And so you have a little bit more leeway there to come up with something maybe outside the box in order to solve this problem, because the goal is supposed to be rehabilitation for delinquent children and reunification and permanence for families that are broken up. And so, you know, it's a place where mentorship, at least in my mind, has a massive role. And one thing that we talked about is what I believe makes a big difference. I love Brother's idea of using hip-hop, because we've got to figure out first where the problem is. Because if we don't, all we're doing is just locking our children up. And if we lock up all our children, then our community dies. There's nothing left. There's nobody to further it. And in order to prevent that and still solve the problems, we got to get to the root of what's going on with the children. And Brother's idea is one of the best I've ever heard as to how to get to it, because the psychologists that are often used by the courts, let's be honest, they know that they are being paid by the courts. And so if you have a court that has a leaning towards the prosecution, then the results of the evaluations tend to lean towards the prosecution. And I've seen results recently, multiple times, where a child has been, they stated that the child is psychologically, there's no way they're confident. There's no way they understand what's going on, but the child is street smart. And because they're street smart, they obviously can handle this. But that's only to say that because this child learned to compensate for the fact that they've got all these difficulties and they didn't give up altogether, we're going to further penalize them rather than help them to deal properly with the difficulties. You know, when we have someone addicted to crack, we talk about that they need to get up. When we have someone addicted to meth, we talk about, you know, this is someone who has a handicap and we need to help them. And we've got to change the way we look at this. That's not just the outside. That's our community too, because we've become so hard on ourselves and on our children that we've given up on them in large part, and we're afraid of them. And when we're afraid of them, we don't step up to tell them, hey, man, that's not going to work. The way you're going is wrong. And like you said in the introduction, I have a 2-year-old. If I don't step up and tell her when she's wrong, she'll burn my house down. I have a duty as a father, and we have a duty as the people in the community to talk to our children.
Yes.
So, yeah, mentorship plays a massive role, and I commend you, brother.
Thank you, sir. I commend you as well, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, this is really beautiful conversation developing here, because, you know, I wanted to go to, we're talking about the factors that the young people who come into these juvenile systems often are dealing with, but, you know, I want to give some of those stats out to talk about the harsh treatment that black youth face in these court systems. We know in Teen Vogue, they actually reported a story where they talked about the 15-year-old girl in McKinney, Texas. Remember how we saw her get thrown by the officers? Dejanae Bechter was her name. And her two friends, you saw them get guns pulled on them. You know, then they talk about this 8-year-old who just recently in April, we see him accused of stealing Doritos, forcibly manhandled, thrown all up, you know, just it was just horrible. And so a lot of times these are minor infractions, you know, that the legal system, and that was what was reported in Teen Vogue. Then I got a report out of the Juvenile Justice Information Exchange, which talked about how youth of color are targeted. And we know this, but as we talk about the need to mentor, we got to talk about the fact that our youth are being targeted. So if we talk about that youth of color are under the age of 21, represent only 21% of the youth in the United States, but account for 71% of the youth held in detention nationwide. And this is kind of like 2012, 2013 stats, but they only stay about the same. This is, again, from the Juvenile Justice Information Exchange. You know, they talk about how 66% of youth committed to juvenile facilities are youth of color after they've been determined supposedly delinquent. And they talk about how these racial disparities go all the way across, from the arrests, the referrals, the detentions, those who are petitioned to court, those who are placed in facilities. You know, youth of color do not commit more crimes than whites, you know, is what. And so we look at implicit bias. You know, we're talking about the stigmas, the self-esteem, the youth of color being killed by police. I mean, I could really go on and on, but I just kind of wanted to throw some of that out because it's true. You know, and then going back to what you were saying, Attorney Peoples, you know, this issue about mentorship and diversion. You know, they look at the fact that diversion, which if you could explain to us what kind of what that means in Tennessee. But, you know, it talks about how when young people are arrested at low-level offenses and referred to court, you know, for the first time, you have the ability, some judges have the ability to informal process those cases or give them, you know, some diversion programs. But with youth of color, you know, they're arrested three times as often, you know, they're after being processed formally and then after being, you know, arrested nine times as often than those who have their cases dismissed. You know, pretty much kind of saying that this whole impact of going through this system, this whole impact of being arrested, being processed, having, you know, going into these systems, it only causes recidivism. You know, like they say, the stats say there's a significant increase in odds for subsequent arrests and juvenile justice system involvement compared to those who get some kind of diversion type programs, you know. And I think I'm going to put mentorship in that too. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. Go ahead, Brother Deshaun.
Yeah, you're completely right. And one thing that I've been hearing lately, I heard an officer say it. I've heard different parties from the court saying it also. They were talking about how now they have this assessment center, and they're trying to come up with some center to assess children and determine whether they should face charges or not, and all of these things. But one thing that I've always seen is discretion. Discretion's always been there. The officers have discretion, and you wouldn't think so in our community because the norm is that if they find something wrong, you're going to go through the entire process. But the officer has always had discretion because in other communities, the officers find a child smoking marijuana or something. They have the ability to take that child home, tell the parents and say, hey, you need to do something about this. That's always existed, but it's never been that for us. And with the court, one of the things that when the federal government came in to investigate the courts here, the juvenile court here, they were talking about how the black children have to go through the process. But everybody don't have to go through the process. There's an opportunity to determine whether a child even needs to go through and be formally seen by a judge, or if it can be just done informally. Hey, I'm going to give you a talking to, and if we see you again, or I'm going to, you know, require this of you, you come back here having done what I stated, and if this happens again, then you're going to have to go through the process like everybody else. When it's something like, you know, the cases that you mentioned, Sister Pamela, where somebody stole something, like something petty, essentially petty crime.
Status offenses.
There's no
right.
Reason
is that
to,
like, mm-hmm.
Right. Like,
go ahead.
Like stole chips or something, you know, just little
okay,
things.
Yes, sir.
There's no
right,
reason to
eight-year-old.
Go through the process. Yeah.
Right.
There's no reason to put that person through the process. We need to talk to that person. We need to figure out if something's wrong. And we need to essentially let them know that this is not acceptable because there are bigger issues to deal with. But
yeah,
we can't.
Yeah.
We have to treat our children like humans. And we have to deal with the bigger issues. We have to deal with those who do terrible things because it happens. But like Brother said, we got to get to the bottom of what's going on because I firmly believe that prevention works a whole lot better than punishment.
Yes.
If I can stop you from wanting to continue to do this thing, then I've saved the taxpayers a whole lot of money, and I've saved the community a whole lot of pain.
That's
as opposed to locking you up, making you better at what it is you want to do wrong, and us having to continue this dance for the rest of your life.
Yes.
And so I think mental should play the major part because over the years I've had numerous, especially black males, come to the court, and I also represent children in one of the small surrounding towns. There, generally, when they get a black male who's just way off track, they just appoint him to be my client, and I sit down and I can talk to him. And so many times, they've never had a man just talk to them about what it is to be a black man in this society because it is like, it's not like what you see on television. And they have to have that honest conversation. They might not have a father in their home, or he might not be in such a condition that he can have a conversation with them. But just having that conversation, just the limited time I get, oftentimes is enough that we don't see that child again.
Mm-hmm.
They know somebody cares, and they understand that it's not just them going through it. They're not the only person who has to walk this road and has to deal with this stuff. So mentorship plays a massive role because we're all responsible.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the perceptives, I want to go to you, Brother James, because there's a stat here that talks about how police overestimate the age of youth of color by approximately 4.5 years from the age of 10 and older, meaning that, you know, our youth are not seen as children. You know, so as
absolutely.
A black man, you know, what is your experience then with treating children like humans, treating them like children?
My experience in the hells of America is the same experience that any black man or woman would experience in the hells of America. They don't view our children as children at all. They don't view us as human beings at all. They view us as their enemy. And that is the problem with us. We don't view them as our enemies. We view them as some timid, misunderstanding people that we can reach their hearts. But we've seen for the last 400 years that their hearts do not hear our cry. Their hearts do not hear our plea. Their hearts are not empathetic to the cause. We lose life. We don't understand that the executive branch of government is at war with the black community. The police represent the executive branch of the United States government. They kill indiscriminately. Regardless of race, regardless of church or affiliation, regardless of whether you're a gang or a black lawyer driving down the street, your life is in danger. You are in a war, and you won't accept the fact. That's what is going on with us. We have an enemy. The Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan said that everything in nature has an enemy. The lion knows that the hyena is its enemy at birth. The gazelle knows that the lion is its enemy at birth, but we've been educated and destroyed because we've been trained and conditioned and taught by our open enemy. And we're being trained in a antiquated school system that is really from the 1930s,
We're not being educated to move fast forward into a future and take control of our minds and our lives. And with the inability for us to be educated correctly, our minds develop incorrectly. They say that the black mind, or they say that the juvenile mind or the adolescent mind cannot reason effectively until 25 or 28. But yet we knew that the gods knew what they wanted to do with their lives by age 6. What is the difference between the gods and the Negroes and the hybrid Negroes that we become today? We are not being educated, but the education that we're offered, if I may say, by the most honorable Elijah Muhammad and the teachings taught by the honorable Ms. Louis Farrakhan, that is a true world education. First of all, knowing who I am, knowing who my enemy is. And when I know myself and my enemy, then I come up with a strategic strategy for survival and implementation of war tactics and formation to guarantee my survival. And war is not always a hot war with guns and bombs and things like this. This is a mind war. This is a battle in the sky for the minds of the people. And until we engage in the battle, there's no chance to win. There's no chance to win until we understand that we are in the battle and we need to separate. So the reality to that question, my sister, is, you know, they're never going to see our children as children. They don't even see our babies as babies. They used to feed our babies to alligators. Wow. How do you feed a 6-month-old baby to a damn alligator and you're waiting to see your 13-year-old child be treated as a child? It ain't going to happen. Not in America. It's not going to happen. So we can't ignore what the legal fact and the legal reality, since we're talking about legality in America, there has been none. That's why we serve under a flag that waves for freedom, justice, and equality, because we had to have a new flag, because under the flag of America, there's never been such a thing. So the ultimate solution would be, and always has been, separation from these people.
Yeah. I hear you, and I, you know, think too in the context of mentoring and working with youth in court systems, because I've seen you do it. We can press the number 1 to get into the host queue if anybody has a question or a comment, you know. But and I think what you're saying is so interesting and so true. And oftentimes our youth are now turning inward, you know, we turn against ourselves, you know, this negative pressure that's coming on us, you know, in these families. Brother Deshaun, I had a great question I thought of for you, because as a family lawyer and a juvenile lawyer, how often do you see some of the family crisis that's going on in the homes where the parents aren't parenting sometimes, like Brother James said, neglect? Well, I think neglect does sometimes start within our own, you know, parents neglecting their own children. Churches might be neglecting other religious institutions. You know, you're not, and just I want to end this, but there's actually a stat that talks about how these racial stereotypes that are on black youth, you don't see them as babies. You don't see them as people who deserve sympathy. You see them as super predators. Sometimes that's from our own people not wanting to help our youth. So, like I said, as a family lawyer who's done divorces, child custody, that kind of stuff, do you see that sometimes feeding into to what's going on with our youth being caught up in these systems, delinquent systems?
Regularly, because a child who's not made to feel like a child starts behaving other than I've had numerous cases, some of them heartbreaking, because the child was made. I had one with a child who had been through so much, I wanted to adopt her. She was 6 years old, and she had been through so much and had been forced to function essentially as an adult for so long in her short life, that when she did come into foster care, she was blessed to be put into a good home with somebody who really cared about her. And the lady just remained so frustrated because she could, no matter how well she treated the girl, she couldn't function like a child, because she was used to essentially being, she used to running a house, and she was 6. Because she never had a chance to be a child. Nobody treated her like a child. And so many times we hear all these songs about children are our future and stuff, but in our community, there oftentimes that's not what we say. A lot of things out of our mouth that we don't really feel, because in large part there tends to be a hatred of the children, a fear of the children. And if you fear your child, you can't treat them as a child. I was at a meeting today of a school board member, and just discussion with the school board member. And there's so much discussion about how the children are going crazy and so forth. And only one person stepped up saying, you know, you have to take ownership. You have to actually do something with that child, speak to that child, because so many people are afraid of them. But they're in this circumstance because we let them go crazy. We don't step up and say, you can't do that, and I'm not going to let you do that. If we do that, they'll respect us. But we don't give them a chance to do that because we run from them. We slam the door when they come around. And they're forced to function like feral animals on their own.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. I mean, parents who are drunk and high sometimes, you know, this is not, you know, you're not taking care. You're neglecting the child, and the child is, like you say, being out there being, you know, preyed upon by these wild savages, like Brother James explained to us. And I think in Houston, we have a term called children in need of supervision. You know, when they come into these court systems and they get adjudicated, and some of the term that we use is that child is in need of supervision. You know, can the parents supervise the child? Are you going to be able to, you know, not be at work at this time? Are you going to be able to provide a plan, you know, so we can at least get you out, maybe while the case is pending? But, I mean, it's absolutely right. Sometimes the children, and this is where, to me, mentorship does come in, because the children are prey. You know, Dave Chappelle did a joke once. Everybody may have gotten mad at him, but he did a joke about how the child, a baby, a two-year-old, was in the community at 2 o'clock in the morning, standing on the corner, and he's in his. You heard. And he's in his limousine, and he's like, wait a minute, why is this two-year-old on the corner? But, you know, this brings up a responsibility for us. And we did not create this. Absolutely, the results of the systemic, the racism, and separation ultimately is the solution. But I also think that separation is part of this, making our own communities decent and safe places
Absolutely.
To live. You know, by forming cocoons around our children. You're going to be separated from this enemy. You're going to separate you from drugs and alcohol. How about that? Separate you from some of this rap music. You know, but we still have an issue with police brutality. So I just wanted to throw it out there. Looks like we have a question, and I'm going to open up the line and then bring it back to you brothers. I think this is such a, I love talking about youth with black men with answers. So let me go ahead and open up the line. 326 is the number here. Yes, 326 ending. I open up your line. You have a question or a comment?
Assalamu alaikum, family. How y'all doing?
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Louis Ali from the South.
Yes, sir. I'm thoroughly
thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you for having this show. We really appreciate you having it every week so that we can listen, because really, and listen to you and my brothers, it's really raising a vibration, because I'm in the car right now going down the road with three young men. And one of the things, you know, when we talk about separation, we should really lean in on, why do we want separation? And in the May 24th issue of The Final Call, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's article was "Not Your Brother." And he said, when you learn that the white man is not your brother, you will be ready to begin to see the divine plan of Allah. See, God has a salvation plan for us, but some of us are so slow to act on the plan because we really believe that a few of the white people might be our brother, but we can't really find them. And so it's always good to start with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's process. They're not our brothers. And it ain't a matter of just black people being good and white people being good and we're going to all get along. It's not going to happen because they're not our brothers. And so I find that black boys, to a brother's point, he was talking about the enemy and how everything in nature has an enemy, can't motivate black boys if they don't have an enemy. It'll make them complacent. And so we have to point out who the enemy is so that they can solve the problem, because if not, we can't justify why we are in the condition that we're in. And there is no mystery enemy, if you will. And so I really was enjoying what Brother was saying about pointing out the enemy and then pointing out that God is within our people and God is with us now, and it is time now for the separation, and that God wants to make a great nation out of us. And it gives us a purpose, Sister Pam, to keep building and keep going. But if we let these lackadaisical coon-like Negroes just sit before our people and tell our people that it's all them, then we can't justify separation, because in their mind, they're telling the people that if we separate, we're going to be worse off than what we are now. And in reality, separation and recognizing that we have an enemy, that's really our salvation. So I'm really enjoying the show. And don't, Sister Pam, and by the way, the views that you hear from Brother Louis Ali are not necessarily the views of the Nation of Islam and all of, or any of its affiliates, but it is definitely the truth.
Yes, sir.
Sister Pam,
no,
I couldn't tell you how much we appreciate you as a black woman to be on the front line and keep this show and this information out before our people. Because you remember the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, we don't need soft talk. We need a kind of talk that'll get our people up off their knees and put them in the process of building and doing something for themselves. So I want to thank you and Dr. Ava and all of y'all that really keep this message out here. So thank you. And I
praise those to Allah. And I wanted, before you leave, because Brother Lewis,
yes.
Brother Lewis,
yes, ma'am.
Sir, all praise are due to Allah. And I wanted you, because you're another person that has a program. You did a TED Talk called Let's Make Black Boys Great Again, and you offer an entrepreneurial approach and a skilled labor approach to teaching young black men. Could you tell us a little bit about that before you leave, please?
Well, we have a slogan that we say skills pay the bills and land literacy for all the land illiterate. And so we know that the land can produce for us, and we know that we can become very wealthy on the land, but the white man took our people after integration away from the skilled trades, away from infrastructure, away from carpentry, and away from electricity, away from all of the things that it takes to plumbing and how to deal with sewage and how to purify water. He took us away from that and put us in liberal arts. And so the TEDx talk that I was talking about and Making Black Boys Great Again, teaching black boys the art of subtlety through hunting and fishing, teaching them the art of subtlety through farming and the trades, the skilled trades. And that's really what we're doing. In fact, I don't know, I ain't going to announce what I'm doing here on the show until you give me permission, but I wish that you could just come to Louisiana and see what we're doing on the land currently and how in the Nation of Islam, which is the greatest ones among our people, how we can just network and build different businesses or business around the country and share intelligence. And I know we can do it. It wouldn't take much for us to do it if we just traveled in the land and see what's working in different spots. And really, to be honest about it, Sister Pam, I was out today with a group of brothers. Young black boys, they want to work. I could put up video every day of what we're doing out there building. If you pay them and use the basic teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, they will show up and they will work. And, I mean, they operate heavy equipment, everything. You know that, Sister Pam, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah, no.
Basically, if you want to see the TEDx talk, it's Make Black Boys Great Again by Louis Ali. Thank you, Sister Pam.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir, for calling. Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum. Did anyone have any comment they wanted to make regarding anything Brother Lewis said? Yeah.
I just want to know, once we're off the air, how do I get in touch with the brother? Because, like I said, when I'm sitting over this court, I want all the programs I can that will actually make a difference.
Yeah.
And entrepreneurship is one of the major things that I think will make a difference, because if these children know how to do for self, there's less need to go and carjack somebody if they know that, if they believe in themselves and have faith that I can get out there with what I know and do something. So I'm already trying to, you know, gather together some entrepreneurs and some programs, and brothers right in line with what I'm trying to set in motion. So I'll be talking to Sister Pamela after this to get his contact information to figure out how we can possibly duplicate that here in Shelby County and Memphis area.
Yes, sir. Because I think it's so beautiful to have you all, different people from different walks of life. I mean, I've been a lawyer since 1990. And when I went into the belly of the beast and I saw how the babies were being treated, you know, telling the world, and, you know, you're not going to mistreat my children in front of me, and I'm not going to, you know, scream it from the rooftops is what I found myself doing. And then those like Brother Deshaun, who is actually looking at how can we make a change and give positive intervention and give prevention services, you know, this is what it's about. I just want to say in closing, I listened to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan as well. He did a lecture in Detroit regarding the issue of separation and building government, and he talked about people running for offices in different states, especially these states where we may overpopulate, or cities that we may overpopulate. So we definitely support those of us who have conscience, you know,
Absolutely.
That really want to help our children and our families. And I just applaud your efforts as well, Brother James and Brother Louis Ali. So thank you for calling. Anybody else, if you have a question or a comment, please press the number 1 to get into the host queue. Anybody, you know, because I guess going back to the issue of mentorship in terms of Brother James, let me see. I have one person, and I think I know this person, so I'm going to open up her mic. Yes, Assalamu alaikum, 314. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, ma'am. This is Sister Amatala. And you know I had to call in today. My son is on the radio. I had to call in.
Yes, ma'am.
Assalamu alaikum, beloved.
Well, alaikum salam, Sister Amatala.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Sister Pamela, I just wanted to say that I had the honor and privilege of working with Brother James Muhammad and Brother Jihad Hassan Muhammad and their staff at Judge Jimmy Edwards School called Innovative Concepts. And it was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. And Judge Jimmy Edwards gave us all the liberty that we needed with the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the brothers did a most excellent job, particularly Brother James, who was in charge of the program. And I watched him and the children and they loved him. And it was the most beautiful experience. And Judge Jimmy Edwards gave us all the liberty that we needed to work with the children. And they were very successful. And I just want to call and, you know, and thank him for the work that he did in St. Louis and to let him know that we miss him and the program greatly. And I thank you for having him on the program, Sister Pamela.
Thank you very much, Sister Amathala. I greatly appreciate that. You've always been supportive,
yes,
and
sir.
I thank you and Brother Joseph and everyone that helped us there. I think about you every day. I've never forgotten the help that you've been to me, myself, and Brother Jahar.
Yes, sir. We had a good time, didn't we? Yes, we did.
Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You very much, Sister Pamela.
Thank you.
Thank
yes,
you. Assalamualaikum.
Yeah, and you know what? I think, Brother Deshaun, you know, listening to, you know, from the standpoint of a lawyer and someone who's seeking to be a judge, you know, we can bear witness that oftentimes getting into helping our youth, it is, there is such a need, and it's really sometimes not the barriers that we think. You know, I've actually informally, you know, done back to school drives, you know, we've done, you know, many programs out of our own pockets because it was just the need. And
so,
you know, getting people who are in positions who can actually relate and want our children to be successful. Because, you know, Brother James, when I asked you earlier about looking at the children as children, you know, I can remember you having modules of, like, growth and development. Like, you know, there might be a child who's a little older, so that child could be, like, you know, the head. You know, he's the one who, you know, whereas the younger ones, you know, they're starting out. So we're going to start you at the beginning stages. And, you know, you might write a poem or something, you know, just run up in the studio.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so that is, I mean, this whole maturity level, because Brother Deshaun, talk to us, you know, from a legal standpoint about how the juvenile court, we look at youth and we see them, you know, they're on TV being negatively stereotyped as just being who, you know, other than children. But in the juvenile courts, there's an understanding that youth are young, you know, they're not mature, you know, they don't have some of the abilities, and this is why we have these courts. Is that correct?
Well, that's supposed to be the case, and that's a large part of why I'm running. You know, here in Shelby County and in the Memphis area, the court here has sent more juveniles to adult court than any other court in the state. And when you look at the statistics, they came in and did an evaluation of this court, and they did the statistics, and the statistics that they came up with said that it was almost exclusively black children that were being transferred. But the scary part of it is they did all these statistics, and the statistics were overwhelmingly us. I mean, the federal government came in and said that, did a report talking about the overwhelming number of black children who are having bad outcomes in this court. But the scary part is when they finished, they said that these statistics are what we have because the court wasn't forthcoming. So whatever we know is going on, we know it's worse than what we know, which is even scarier. But the court is supposed to view these children as children and is supposed to be seeking to rehabilitate them. But rehabilitating our children, like Brother started off by saying, is not something you can do with a big box program. You're not going to have a one-size-fit-all solution to rehabilitating our children, because our neighborhoods and our community is so destroyed that they're not facing, this isn't a child for whom everything else is going smoothly and you know, that one influence is the rap music. That plays a part,
right.
But these children have massive influences that are leading them in this direction every day, from inside the home till the time they walk out the home, till they get into school. Hell, inside the school, they're facing trauma. And so they have multiple traumas, and we need to get to the bottom of what's going on so that we can turn this child around. And that's why I'm impressed with what brother's saying in terms of the hip hop, because they need an outlet. You know, we can send a
yes.
child to a counselor, but if they choose not to talk, then that's, what have you found
Absolutely.
Out? The counselor's still gonna produce a report. You give the child
that's
an
right.
outlet where they feel comfortable, then you learn more about them, because they don't feel like they're just talking to a stranger. They're just releasing what's in them. And you learn more about mm-hmm. them, and you can figure out, hey, this is some of what's going on, and you can address it. Oftentimes we look at the delinquent side of what a child has done, but we don't realize this child has been truly traumatized with
yes.
with this latest shooting in Texas. The first thing they said was, we have to rush counselors down to this school, and they're right, because these children have been traumatized watching their friends get shot. But many of the children
yeah.
that go through the court are from neighborhoods like where I grew up. We watched
That's right.
our friends get shot.
In Chicago. Right.
We watched our friends get shot on a regular basis. I grew up thinking I would
yeah.
never live past 16, and many of these children
yes.
are in the same boat. If they don't believe they're going to be an adult, then having a conversation with them about what they're going to do with their life is a waste of time until you make them understand that there's a chance for them.
Yes.
So the mentorship plays a massive role, and we have to have people, if the court is going to do anything beneficial, it has to have somebody who understands where these children are coming from, because you can't solve a problem that you can't see. You can't, you know, there's a reason why the doctor puts a scope inside your body to figure out what's going on
yeah.
rather than just looking at you from the outside saying, hey,
yeah.
looks like you got some cancer. They actually do some in-depth searching so that they
Indeed.
Can solve the problem. But we have to believe that our children are worth it enough to figure out what the problem is. And so many times
That's
we've
right.
given up on them to the point where we don't care what's wrong with them. Throw them away. And that way he won't
mm-hmm.
do anything. But he's going to come back. And he's going to do work.
Come on.
And
come
somebody's
on.
Looking at him and going to do it again. I found that in
yes.
my own mentoring children, oftentimes what we run into is that the child's father may be in prison. And when a child's father
yes.
is in prison and they don't have access to him, then that child's behavior is outrageous. But I'm briefly with a brother who's got a program to reunite the child with that father. Because if that father can just tell the child the reality of what they're dealing with, and that the father still loves the child, and that
yes.
the child doesn't have to follow that route, then we may have solved a whole lifetime of crime with just conversations.
Absolutely.
Some of these problems can be fixed, but we have to care enough about our children to look for a solution rather than
yeah.
just throw them away and look at what they did. Because if it were our
Absolutely.
Own child or our own nephew or that one child in our life who we care about and we think has a future, we would try and figure out a solution for them. We'd be like, no, that child ain't this kind of child. Well, many of our children
mm-hmm.
aren't really that kind of child. They just haven't had a chance to become what we think they should be. And we've got to give them a chance. We've got to figure out what's up, because we want our communities to be safe. It's a safer place if that child who used to be the thug in the neighborhood goes right, becomes a homeowner, becomes a committed member of the society. Because when somebody comes yeah. into that neighborhood, he's going to stop them. My argument is that the best protection for a neighborhood is to turn these children around, set them right, put them in the neighborhood. They'll protect it because that's what they do.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, because we've had different conversations, you know, on legal matters and legal issues. Because we'll have the conversation about how, as an attorney, I tell you the best protection for your child is to never let them go into a room with white people and be mm-hmm. interrogated without legal representation. We'll talk about that.
That's right.
You know, but when we talk about going to a level that might be a little bit higher where you can affect maybe larger jurisdictions because you have access to the children and having black faces dealing with children's issues, I mean, you all as our listeners, please understand that many of our children in these systems are dealing with people who don't look like them. They're not black people time who are providing the service or who are asking the questions like Brother Deshaun is explaining. You know, there are other attorneys who may not be able to relate, or they have prejudices and biases, or like Brother James said, they just have outright, you know, desires to see the destruction of black children. So, you know, again, this is such an important conversation, I think. I just want to throw out two concepts, and then we, you know, because it really is at the root, like you said, Brother James, it's going back to, you know, the genocidal plot from slavery, and it continues. And it looks like now what they call in the Hispanic, with the border, they talk about unaccompanied minors. You know, that right. like Brother Deshaun said, post-traumatic stress syndrome. When we look at our children in these neighborhoods, when they don't have parents because of whatever reason, grandparents are raising children, they're unaccompanied. You know, they're severed from their family, so they're suffering these mental distresses from not having the family. So this is where we have to step in and have a leadership that, you know, will make it more accessible for qualified members of our community. You know, I think it's important because, you know, like Brother James, you actually were able to work in a court system, and I mean, I watched you in practice mentoring, and he was just fabulous. The youth, you know, they looked at you, they liked your image because they could relate to it, and you, you know, gave them some medicine on self, you know, improvement, self-esteem, you know, but you put it in a way that the young people could understand, and that's so important.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So I'm moving on, and I just want to just add, you know, we want to remember our brother, Captain Shahid Muhammad,
absolutely.
Who was the student captain emeritus who out in Los Angeles, and he passed away. And so we were able to go to his janazah this past weekend. And in the final call, there's a wonderful article about our brother. And this is the June 7, 2022 final call written by Sister Charlene Muhammad. And I think one of the things he said, because we know that he was just such a wonderful person in the community, soldier, you know, trainer of men, you know, loved the teachings. And there's one part that's so important in this article where it talks about how Compton, California, had became a primary target of the CIA Contra crack cocaine epidemic.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think Brother Deshaun and I both know that sometimes children that we see, the families that we see who've been torn apart, you know, this is a crack cocaine several generations removed, you know, the great-grandchildren or
yeah.
the grandchildren who, of people who were destroyed in these crack cocaine epidemics. And so according to Sister Tiffany, his wife, and she's one of our attorneys, she said that that was one of his proudest moments, was to actually, under the minister's guidance, he became an integral part in saving lives and cleaning the streets and protecting the community and, you know, working with gang truces, executing gang truces, creating employment, and even helping to elect a mayor, you know, of Compton. He actually was, you know, integral in attracting several local entertainers to the mosque, including MC Ren, Ice Cube, and West Coast Cam. So, you know, want to give a definite remembrance and thanking Allah for this brother. And, you know, we've said that we want a portion, double portion of that spirit, because this, in my opinion, is part of the mentorship program, part of looking at the communities, part of, you know, looking at the needs of our youth and our families in the community. So, yeah. So we're kind of coming down to the last couple of we got about 20 minutes left, and if anybody has a question or a comment for Brother Deshaun X Peoples, who is running for judge of the juvenile court in Shelby County, or if anyone has a question or a comment for our brother from the Dynasty Hip Hop Mentoring Program in St. Louis, Missouri, please press the number 1 to get into the host queue. So, Brother Deshaun, tell us a little bit more about some of your major platform issues that you see as a judge you want to bring to the forefront.
Well, the major issue is that Black people have just a worse outcome from this court and actually end up having to go through the process in this court more than anybody else, like I said, to the point where even the federal government acknowledged it. And it was, they were under a consent decree for a number of years. And then in 2018, a number of politicians here in Memphis banded together and requested that William Barr under the Trump administration take them out of the consent decree. They acknowledged that they had not completed what they needed to do, but they released them from it. So now there's a push that there be federal oversight. And we know that the federal government isn't necessarily our friend from the beginning. So when the federal government says that you're too racist, it's extreme. And that's the environment that I have here in Memphis and in Shelby County. And so I want to come in and I want to actually deal with the circumstances, because, yeah, we have crime. Yeah, we have broken families, but we have to have somebody who actually knows, cares about, and loves these families enough to figure out a solution. And we don't have anybody with that real life connection to them. So I'm actually a very, very private person, but this has forced me to come out of that, because, you know, there's a time when we all got to step up and do what we don't want to do, but we need it. Our community needs it. And it's often overlooked, because we think of juvenile court as kiddie court. But when we talk about a school-to-prison pipeline, the turnpike is juvenile court. That's where they're fed into the adult system.
Yes.
As it happens, once that happens, then we're losing so many. So we have to step up. We have to make these changes. We have to actually care about these families. You know, when children are taken from their families, we need to come up. We need to not just be talking to the parents. We need to talk to Big Mama. We need to talk to their play cousins, whoever it is we got. Anybody that can step up and help, we need to be willing to bring them in. But we got to actually respect the people enough to want to come to these conclusions rather than thinking that, you know, this is a home with a single mom, so obviously they can't do it. Because there's always a support system somewhere. We just have to find
That's
it,
right.
help build it, and make this thing happen. Because I know that our community is stronger than it looks like on paper. And we have to actually, we have to know that. And we have to commit to that. And we have to collectively love our people enough to make our community a safe place to live. And I just want to be the, I have to be the person who steps up and does it because nobody else has done it yet. So I want to be the judge to do that, to say, hey, look, nope. We ain't giving up on Lil Ray Ray. Lil Ray Ray been out
yeah.
there acting a fool, but Lil Ray Ray don't have no food in his home.
Right.
If we could solve that problem, Lil Ray Ray won't be out there committing this crime. So we have to actually stop and think about what's going on. And we can make our community safer because the person that helps them is the person who they'll want to help. And I've been asking entrepreneurs to help. And my pitch to do so is if you're the person who gives them a chance and you're the person who sits down and talks to them, then you're the person who won't get robbed because you're the person who they'll respect and you're the person who they'll tell their friends, nope, don't mess with him because he actually took time with me. It's
right.
a security system to actually care about our people.
That's right.
Because we
That's
love
right.
the person who helped us.
No, you're right. And you know what? And Brother James, I'm going to bring you into this. But, I think it's so important what you're saying because I found out when you're talking, so the importance of why youth court and who is sitting in those chairs is because exactly like you said, Brother Deshaun, this is where it begins. And once the children get into the system, they get sucked in. And then they are permanently at risk of becoming a part, really, of being destroyed. And so we have to protect our children. These are children. And, you know, it's almost like sometimes in these courts we see grown people picking on children like bullies. But, you know, and I just want to throw it out there, but so you have to understand that the children have been neglected and ignored because these children don't vote. You know, that's one of the reasons. I mean, I know that the ultimate target is through the youth and the Joshua generation, and, you know, they don't want black people to rise. Our enemy doesn't want us to rise, so you attack the children. It's in the Bible. But you also don't have the right people in our community stepping up because – is there any interest? Is there any money in the children? Dude, the children are not going to vote. They're not going to put you in. And so it's like we're blindly signing our own certificates of death if we're not protecting our children. And again, I know I get passionate about this, but this is one area in law where you can really do something because these are children. And so if you intervene early, perhaps you could really make a difference. Like the brother is saying, sometimes it's a reading issue. They talk about how the children, they build prison beds based on fourth grade reading scores. Isn't that right, Brother Deshaun? And so we can teach you how to read.
Well, definitely. And and I actually just spoke with someone yesterday, and the literacy rate here is ridiculous in terms of when I get a delinquent child, I very rarely have a child who's confident enough to actually read the charges against them and understand what that means, even on a basic level. The ability to comprehend and the ability to express themselves is the educational system is dumbing us down. And somebody who can't express themselves is going to lash out. And oftentimes that's a big part of what we deal with. The ministers talked about how we have to learn to express ourselves because that's often a cause of even domestic violence. is that someone can't express themselves properly, so they just lash out violently. If you know that's true for mm-hmm. somebody who's not fully developed in a child or in a teenager.
Yeah, that's right. And especially when they're being bullied by systems and teachers and cops and, you know, their own parents and
yeah.
not eating properly. You know, it's this is an issue, audience, that we really need to look at in terms of these dealing with our youth. And Brother James, I know you've been quiet these last couple of, you know, moments, but again, you know about this issue because I've seen you do some tremendous work dealing with the voices, looking at what the voices of the youth are, and talking to the youth. So, you know, tell us what we're missing. Is there something that the audience needs to know about? What are some of the needs of the youth?
What my brother was saying is it's a very intricate part as far as being able to communicate. And it is very clear that in our community that communication is not what we use to solve problems. We learn to use guns. We learn to use violence. We learn to use destructive means to solve problems. But communication and effective communication by mastering words, mastering communication, understanding nonverbal communication, it's very intricate. And what we teach in our mentoring program, the mastery of the English language, how to use words, how to express effectively what it is that you want to say. We go beyond the words like dog, cat, bat, and mumble rap. We go into the words that are more powerful words, and they have to understand what these words are. They have to understand what metaphysics is. They have to understand what the what words like universal polarity and black matter. We try to take them into a new understanding, a universal understanding, where they're using words that will empower them. And once they use this expression that empowers them, it sets them up for their own individual activism, because self-improvement community development starts with self-improvement. Your own individual activism starts when I can clearly define what I want for myself. If I'm being mistreated, I can say I'm being mistreated. I can state it clearly. I can state it effectively. People know that there's a formidable intelligence in me, and they respect you, regardless of education. Your education is most shown and most pronounced in the words you use and the effective ability to communicate. And that's what we give to these young people, and they have to have that. Once they master self-activism and protecting themselves and their emotions and how they feel, they grow into community activism. They know how to speak. They know how to move. They know how to influence others. Because now through my words, through my charisma, but most of all through moral aptitude and obedience to righteous laws and conduct, I can inspire and move others. And that is how we improve our communities. Mastery of self-activism, expanding to universal activism, and changing the world. So it all starts with understanding music. Music is something that comes together in a harmonious way. People have to come together in a harmonious way. When we understand that I can take this bass guitar, when I can take this flute, and I can take this drum beat, and I can bring harmony, but not only is the music harmonious, but my spirit and my words are harmonious with community, and I put that spirit and those words over that harmonious beat, then I can change millions of lives. The Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan said that one rap song can do more than 1,000 ministers, I believe, if I'm not misquoting him. But he said than 1,000 lectures or one minister could do. But we have to get in that mode of actually understanding the power of music, how fast it moves, how fast it travels. A person can watch a movie, and it takes 2 hours for the idea of the movie to get across. A person listens to a song, they effectively change within 3 minutes. So we have to use the weapon that works fastest. So if this was a biochemical weapon that we were using, if Ebola kills in 2 days and another biological weapon kills in 2 years, which would be the most effective weapon? The Ebola would be the most effective weapon. So if music can kill the mind of social depravity and social degradation in 3 minutes, and a movie can kill it in 2 hours, then we want to use music. And when we did a survey asking young people, which would they rather live without? Would you rather live without television and movies, or would you rather live without music? And 95% said they would rather live without television and movies. Music is so important. Memories are based on it. You could play a song and you would instantaneously go back in time. It can be used in auditing. It can be used in returning. You can listen to a song and remember something you never thought about. And they've done studies on people with Alzheimer's, and they show that people with Alzheimer's, when they hear music, instantly they go right back, and all of a sudden their memory is back, and they're remembering and recalling things, and when the music cuts off, they're lost again. So this shows that there's a study and that music is an intricate part, especially of arithmetic people that have been using music to communicate, whether it's our brothers, the Indians with the war drums, or whether it was in Africa with the war drums, or whether it's just us in speaking and humming or Quranic scripture. Well, even when we say the Al-Fatiha, when we do the call, the prayer, it's a musicianship behind it. It's musical. So this is how we work. This is the essence of how we work and how we learn. And when we understand it, we can gain mastery of ourselves, activism, and our community in its totality.
Mm, beautiful, beautiful. Because as you were saying, like, I know Kendrick Lamar's new song, I've heard the one with the Marvin Gaye beat. And what is it called?
It's called Heart. Yes, ma'am.
Heart. And, it's so inspiring because it's speaking to me to the pain of what people go through, especially black men in America, because he goes into these different, he's OJ or he's Kobe Bryant or he's Kendrick Lamar. Nipsey Hussle. But saying that to say that, we talk about the negative things that rap are used for, which they absolutely can sometimes inspire, as the minister told us, they'll inspire criminal behavior. I mean, when you have people encouraging you to smoke weed and lean and all of this, this is a negative use of a beautiful weapon. Like you say, music has a wonderful, wonderful usage. And so we have to encourage more positive music.
Absolutely.
Being piped to our youth. And to me, that's a whole separation issue. Like, can I separate listening to that, which is going to absolutely take you down and make you get into some low-level mindset that, Brother Deshaun, will cause them to have to come into our office as lawyers because potentially some of that music is influencing.
Oh,
so,
Yes, the music is culture. It forms culture. And culture has become something that we live by, that we inherit, that we think is our people, because we actually believe that being black is being gangster. We actually believe that being black is being negative. It's a badge of negativity. And when we see someone going to school or getting a higher education, we say they sell out. They're being white. Why are you acting white? You're getting straight A's. That's not white. When we understand the totality and the destruction that has come from these people and how we've been annihilated, we will understand what being white really is. But keeping our focus that black is not to be seen as derogative, belligerent, or destructive behavior. It is not that, but we're being fed who we are by our open enemy because we don't control the music industry. If a cat was teaching a bird how to be a bird, then the bird would lose every time if the cat was the teacher. So if the cat says, hey, you don't build nests in trees, why would you do that? You build a nest on the ground, but the cat knows it's easier for it to eat the bird if the nest is on the ground. So this is the kind of education that we're being getting. We're being taught by people who are not looking out for our best interests. So it should be no surprise where we end up. We're going to end up in prison every time. There was a meeting among rappers in the late 80s where they told the rappers, look, we need you to make music that will fill up prisons. We need you to make music that will cause the use of violence, alcohol, and drugs to fill prison because they were making the industrialized prison complex at the time. They were designing it. Just like how our brother said, they build rockets in prison. Well, this was an idea that was fostered in the late 80s, and they approached rappers and said, we need you to do this. And rappers that said they did not want to do it had guns pulled on them and were escorted off the property. Those who said they wanted to do it went into the contract, and there you go with the degenerate music that we've seen that is still affecting us more than three generations later. So we have to take a stand, and we have to be effective, and that's what Dynasty Hip Hop Mentoring Program is all about, is teaching the reality that you can also make good music, you can make good social change, and we can undergo a process of producing our own social engineering process that will make life better for us.
Yes, sir. Beautiful. So we're about to close out, Brother Deshaun. Did you want to give like 1 minute or so close out and? Thank you so much for coming on. Yes, sir.
I want to start by saying, brother, let's keep in touch, because I want to utilize your method. I think
yes,
it'll make a massive difference in dealing with our children. But
thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
I want to say we need your support. I've told you what it is that we're trying to do. I'm running for juvenile court judge in Memphis and Shelby County area. If you want to help us in any way, our website is peoples, P-E-O-P-L-E-S, the number 4thepeople.com. That's peoples, 4thepeople.com. We need all the help we can get. If it's just prayer, throw them up. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you. And you know, as I'm looking at a Final Call article from November the 2nd, 2021, a sister has got a son, and she's saying, killing our own isn't gangster. You know, and the article is entitled Fighting the Cycle of Violence with Stipends and Mentorships, and it's by Stacey M. Brown. This came off the Newswire. So, see, this is what we're talking about. You know, we work together, making our own communities decent and safe places to live. It's a must. So I really thank both of you all, Brother James W. Muhammad, the Associate Director of Dynasty Hip Hop Mentoring Program in Dallas, Texas,
as well as
Attorney Deshaun X. Peoples. Thank you so much for appearing on our show tonight. And I would like to
thank you
all for listening to Hey, yes, sir. Thank you. Praises are due to Allah. And thank you for listening to A Time for Justice to the listeners. To hear previous shows, you can log on to the Elevated Places Network, and A Time for Justice is there. I would like to thank our sister, Minister Dr. Ava Muhammad, who her show,
yes,
The Elevated Places, comes on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Thank you for the opportunity to have a show, A Time for Justice. I'd like to thank the Elevated Places team. That's Brother Terrence, Sister Donna, and also Sister Rona. I definitely have to thank the listeners and the callers who made comments and questions tonight. Thank you all for listening to A Time for Justice. We really do appreciate the time, and we consider it an immense opportunity to serve by sharing any information we have in the legal arena. And, you know, again, thank you all once again for listening. And I'd like to thank, last but not least, I have to thank my producer. That's Samaya Muhammad. She's our screener, and she comes on every week. And she's a youth, and that's why it's really important that I do acknowledge her, because she is a youth, and she takes her time every week to join us and to assist us in making this show happen. So, you know, thank you all once again for listening, and tune in next week for more informative discussions. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, like, hello.